I am Cassandra, daughter of Troy and the Curse of Truth. I was born in the great city of Troy, daughter of Priam and Hecuba, and I was gifted with beauty and intelligence that drew the eyes of gods and mortals alike. I should have been a queen, surrounded by luxury and adoration, but instead, I was marked by a god's gift and his curse, one that turned my beauty into a burden. It all began with Apollo, that fickle god of prophecy and poetry. He came to me, handsome and charming, offering me a gift in exchange for a kiss. I had no reason to refuse. What harm could there be in a god's favor? I accepted, thinking he would shower me with blessings, and in his divine hands, I was granted the gift of prophecy. I could see the future, discern the threads of fate that weave through time. It was the greatest gift, the most powerful thing anyone could offer. But it was never meant to be a gift at all. Apollo's eyes burned with desire, and he demanded that I return his affection. I refused. I would not let his love, his divine and possessive love, define me. I chose my independence, my will, my own freedom. In anger and jealousy, Apollo cursed me. He told me I would always speak the truth, always see what was coming, but no one would ever believe me. The words that tumbled from my lips would be treated as madness, lies, or nonsense. I was condemned to foresight without acceptance. I did not ask for this curse, but it was upon me, woven into the very fabric of my being. It was a gift that rotted into a prison. How could I bear this weight, this insight into the inevitable, when the world refused to listen? How could I carry the truth when those around me would not even acknowledge it? As time passed, I began to see it all. The death of my people, the fall of my beloved Troy, the doom that awaited us at the hands of the Greeks. I knew of the Trojan horse before it ever even approached our gates. I saw the treachery in the hearts of our enemies, but no one listened. They laughed at me. They mocked me for my warnings. I begged them to take heed, to stop the madness. But their arrogance and their complacency were more powerful than my words. "You're crazy," they would say. "It's just a horse, Cassandra. Why do you always look for doom?" And so they dragged it through the gates, smiling with triumph. The Greeks poured out from inside, and the city was destroyed. My home, my world reduced to ash. I was right, but it meant nothing. I saw it, and I was powerless to stop it. But it didn't end with Troy. No. I was not meant to be left in peace even then. After the city fell, I was taken as a prize of war. I was given to King Agamemnon, another Greek who thought he knew better. They saw me as nothing but a trophy, a symbol of their victory. But I remained the same. The knowledge did not leave me. I still saw what was to come, the death that would befall me, the betrayal I would suffer. But once again, my words meant nothing. No one ever listened. It's a bitter irony, having the truth, being able to see the world's future, and yet being silenced by the very people whose lives I sought to save. I have become a figure of misunderstanding. People say I was mad, but madness is not the absence of truth. It is the agony of bearing it alone, with no one to hear. They say I was a prophetess of doom, but what they fail to understand is that I was not a harbinger of destruction. I did not wish for the world to fall apart, nor did I relish seeing the future unfold as I did. I simply knew, and knowing was a curse. I was not trying to bring suffering, I was trying to prevent it, yet my warnings were ignored, my wisdom was laughed at, and I became something to be feared or ridiculed, not revered. They say I was arrogant, or that I sought attention, but how could I? I did not want to be the center of their world. I only wished for them to see the truth, to open their eyes. I never asked for this burden. I never asked to be the voice of things no one wanted to hear. I was cursed with the truth, and truth has a way of cutting through the heart of things. It doesn't lie. It doesn't soften the blow. It is unyielding and unforgiving. I watched as my world crumbled, and I was unable to stop it. And when I saw my death approaching at the hands of Clytemnestra, I tried to warn them. I screamed it. I cried it out, but once again, my words were nothing more than the ravings of a madwoman. And so I met my end, just as I had foreseen it, alone in the cold silence of not being heard. Do not mistake me for a mere prophet of doom. I am not some tragic figure who simply predicted the fall of a city. No, I am the voice of truth that is ignored. I am the one who sees the coming storm and begs for the world to listen, even when it chooses to laugh. I am the woman who cannot be heard, who carries the weight of knowing without the ability to alter the course of history. If you can learn anything from my story, let it be this. Listen. Listen to the voices that bring you truths, even when those truths are uncomfortable. Do not dismiss the warnings. Do not ignore the knowledge that is given to you, for it is not arrogance to speak the truth. It is the courage to stand alone when no one will stand with you. If you remember nothing else, remember that truth, though painful, is always worth hearing. Before the ashes, before the war songs and the hollow horse, Troy stood like a jewel at the throat of the world. The city was not merely stone and wall. It pulsed with gold, with pride, with prophecy. Its towers kissed the sky, its gates stood unbroken, and within those mighty ramparts lived kings and queens who spoke with the gods. At the heart of this kingdom walked Hecuba, queen of Troy. Regal, sharp-eyed, and burdened with dreams she dare not speak aloud, she ruled beside Priam, her husband, whose name would one day be etched in lament, though now he sat tall on his throne, beloved by a city that believed itself untouchable. Their daughter, Cassandra, was unlike the other women of the court. She did not dance at festivals, nor delight in silks and sapphires. She moved like shadow between the palace and the temple, her lips always murmuring prayers or riddles, her eyes cast towards futures no one else could see. Even as a child, she had the stillness of an oracle, and the sadness of one who already knew how the story ends. The city adored its royal family, but it did not understand them. Not Cassandra, not Hecuba, not the divine threads woven through their bloodlines. Troy was a city of glory, yes, but also of blindness. Its towers reached so high they could not see the storm gathering at their feet. It's 1250 BC, and Cassandra is a priestess of Apollo. To be chosen as a priestess of Apollo was to stand between mortal and divine, to live in the light of a god who was both beautiful and terrifying. You were not ordinary. You were watched, revered, sometimes feared. In the hushed stone chambers of Apollo's temple, where laurel leaves burned and sunlight poured in through sacred openings, the priestess served as oracle, healer, and vessel. She wore white linen robes, often embroidered with gold or symbols of the sun. Her hair might be unbound, her skin perfumed with myrrh or olive oil, but her body and voice did not belong to her alone. They belonged to the god. It is said that gods see, not as mortals do. They do not glance, they perceive. And when Apollo first saw Cassandra, he did not see a girl, a daughter of a king, or even a priestess in training. He saw a mind like a flame and a soul carved from silence. She was no more than a child when he noticed her in the sacred grove beneath the shifting light of laurel trees. While others danced or offered garlands, Cassandra knelt in quiet prayer, eyes closed as if already speaking with something beyond, not begging, not praising, but listening. And Apollo, the god of prophecy, music, and light, paused. In her stillness, he saw something he rarely found in mortals: clarity. She did not seek the favor of the divine. She sought the truth that the divine carried. He admired that, and over the years, he watched her grow. She became a woman of sharp insight and deep silence. Her beauty was not loud. It was the kind that unfolded slowly, like the way light slips over marble at dawn. Her voice was pure, clear, and always certain. Not even the older priests questioned her instincts. Apollo, who had inspired poets and princes, found himself yearning, not just for her body, but for companionship, for someone who could understand the weight of foresight, who could speak in riddles, not for mystery, but for mercy. He wanted her beside him, not just as a priestess, but as something more. The sun hung low over Troy, casting the temple of Apollo in molten gold. Cassandra stood alone before the altar, the scent of laurel and ash clinging to her robes. She'd finished the morning rites, her voice still echoing faintly in the chamber. And then the air changed. The shadows pulled back. The torches, though unlit, flickered. A hush fell over the temple as if the very stones had forgotten how to breathe. And he was there, Apollo, god of light, of song, of prophecy, descended, not with thunder, but with silence so profound it made her bones ache. His form shimmered with unbearable beauty, crowned in golden radiance, eyes deep as eternity. Music played where he stepped, though no instrument could be seen. Cassandra, daughter of Priam, priestess of my temple, he said, his voice like honey over fire. I've watched you, not just your prayers, but your soul. She bowed her head. My lord, I am your servant. No, he said, stepping closer. You're more than that. She looked up and met the gaze of a god. It was not power that frightened her. It was the intensity, the need. I would give you a greater gift, he whispered, the full sight, to see not just threads of fate, but the weave itself, to know the truth that lies behind time. She didn't move. In return, he said, be mine. Speak my name, not only in prayer, but in love. Share yourself with me, not in duty, but in desire. She was silent for a long time, then softly, but clearly, I cannot. Apollo's face darkened, not with rage, but with something more dangerous, wounded pride. I serve you with all I am, she said, stepping back, but I will not be possessed, not even by a god. The warmth of the temple dimmed. Then take what you have asked for, he said coldly. Take the gift. Keep the truth. See the threads, the deaths, the betrayals, the fire. See it all. She staggered as light flooded her mind. Visions like lightning. Her brothers falling in blood. The wooden horse breaching the gates. The cries of infants. The sky splitting open and then stillness. She gasped, blinking. Apollo stepped away, his voice now colder than marble. But your truth will rot in your mouth. No one will believe you. They'll call you mad, a liar, a cursed woman. You'll speak, and the world will turn its back. Cassandra fell to her knees. I've given you everything, he said, and taken only what was mine. Then in a blaze of sunlight, he vanished. Only silence remained. Outside, the bells of Troy rang for an ordinary day. But Cassandra, seer of what was to come, tasted the ashes on the wind. And she knew no one would listen. Cassandra was the daughter of King Priam and Queen Hecuba. She was the princess of Troy, a powerful and wealthy city-state. Her twin brother, Helenus, also possessed the gift of prophecy. Her other brothers were Hector, Troy's greatest warrior and noble prince, beloved by the people, and Paris, the prince. Her youngest brother was Troilus. In both Virgil's Aeneid and Euripides' The Trojan Women, Cassandra emerges as a pivotal figure whose prophetic insight centers on the fate of her brother, Paris. Her vision foretells the catastrophic consequences of Paris' journey to Sparta, where his abduction of Helen, then the wife of King Menelaus, sets in motion a chain of events, culminating in Troy's ruin. Despite the urgency and clarity of her warnings, Cassandra's voice falls on deaf ears, a tragic silence imposed by Apollo's curse that ensures her foresight is met with skepticism and dismissal. This collective disregard by her family and the Trojan elite not only isolates Cassandra, but also seals the very destiny she strives to avert, underscoring the profound tension between divine knowledge and human disbelief within this epic narrative. Cassandra's most enduring and tragic prophecy is arguably her forewarning concerning the famed Trojan horse, a pivotal moment at the culmination of the Trojan War. After 10 years of protracted siege, the Greeks appear to abandon their campaign, leaving behind a massive wooden effigy supposedly dedicated to the goddess Athena. While the Trojans interpreted this as a gesture of surrender and divine appeasement, Cassandra, endowed with prophetic insight, yet cursed never to be believed, discerned this deception. She declared the structure to be a vessel of subterfuge, harboring armed Greek warriors within its hollow core. Her impassioned pleas to destroy the horse and reject it as a sacrilegious trick fell on deaf ears. Fatigued by war and seduced by the illusion of victory, the Trojans dismissed her warnings as the ravings of a madwoman. In their eagerness to celebrate peace, they ushered the instrument of their own destruction into the heart of the city, thus fulfilling the very doom Cassandra had so desperately sought to prevent. Throughout the course of the Trojan War, Cassandra issued a series of dire predictions, each more urgent than the last. Yet all were consistently disregarded by those around her. Among her visions was the impending death of her brother Hector, destined to fall by Achilles' hand, as well as the widespread suffering and devastation that the war would exact upon both the Trojan and Greek lives. Her unwavering stream of grim foresight, though unfailingly accurate, only served to reinforce her tragic image as a figure unmoored by reason. In A Cruel Paradox, the very clarity of her visions became the cause of her marginalization, casting her deeper into social exile and emotional torment. Her voice, though prophetic, echoed unheard in a city hurtling towards its ruin. Cassandra's long-ignored visions reached their harrowing fulfillment in the final fatal hours of Troy. Under the cover of darkness, Greek warriors concealed within the hollow belly of the wooden horse emerged, and they flung open the city gates, ushering in the full force of the Greek army. The Trojans, unprepared and unsuspecting, were swiftly overwhelmed. Blood filled the streets as the once mighty city was reduced to ash and ruin. Amid the chaos, Cassandra stood as both seer and witness, powerless to prevent the nightmare she had so vividly foreseen. In that moment, her prophetic clarity was tragically confirmed, serving as a final, bitter vindication of the curse laid upon her by Apollo, a gift of truth rendered futile by disbelief. In the midst of Troy's collapse, its walls breached, its streets aflame, Cassandra fled to the one place she believed inviolable, the Temple of Athena. There, beneath the gaze of the goddess, she clung to the sacred statue, seeking divine asylum amid the ruin. But even the sanctity of the gods offered no protection. Ajax the Lesser, son of Oileus, not to be mistaken for Ajax the Greater, he stormed the temple and, in a moment of brutal impiety, seized Cassandra from the altar and raped her. By dragging her from the feet of the goddess, he shattered not only the sanctity of the sacred space, but the moral boundary between war and blasphemy. This act of profound sacrilege did not go unanswered. Athena, outraged by the defilement of her temple and the violation of her supplicant, would see justice done, not only upon Ajax himself, but upon the Greek fleet whose homeward journey would be cursed by divine wrath. After the smoldering ruins of Troy had quieted, Cassandra's fate took yet another grim and ironic twist. Claimed as a spoil of war, she was brought back to Mycenae by none other than Agamemnon, the very architect of Troy's ruin and the supreme commander of the Greek forces. As a war prize and concubine, she entered the household of the man responsible for the annihilation of her people, not as queen or priestess, but as property, silenced yet again, though no less aware. For despite her captivity, Cassandra's cursed gift remained intact. She could still see what others could not or refused to, and her visions of doom would now haunt not just the fallen city of Troy, but the blood-soaked palaces of Mycenae as well. The tragedy, it seemed, had only changed addresses. As Cassandra accompanied Agamemnon on his ill-fated return to Mycenae, the burden of foresight once again weighed heavily upon her. Her prophetic vision revealed the shadow of death awaiting them both, a conspiracy not rooted in foreign warfare, but in domestic betrayal. She foresaw that Clytemnestra, Agamemnon's estranged wife, alongside her lover, Aegisthus, they were preparing to exact a brutal revenge. The motives were deeply personal and politically charged. The unhealed wound of Iphigenia's sacrifice at Olyse and the insult of Cassandra's presence as both concubine and spoil of war. True to the curse laid upon her by Apollo, Cassandra's warnings fell on deaf ears yet again. Agamemnon, whether out of arrogance, disbelief, or political necessity, dismissed the forebodings of the Trojan seeress he now held as a captive. In this fatal dismissal, history yet again repeated itself, her truth once more rendered inert by the curse of disbelief. Upon the arrival at the palace, Cassandra's final prophecy was realized with ruthless precision. In an act both symbolic and savage, Clytemnestra struck down her husband and his foreign prophetess, ending Cassandra's life in the same tragic cadence that had defined it. one where vision held no power and truth was fated to go unheard. Her death, like her life, stood as a profound indictment of those who ignore uncomfortable truths, especially when spoken by women rendered voiceless by the very structures they seek to mourn. The figure of Cassandra, long confined to the margins of a Greek myth as a doomed prophetess, has taken on new resonance in modern psychological and cultural discourse. Far from being merely a tragic character swept along by fate, Cassandra emerges as a rich and deeply symbolic figure, one whose story continues to speak to the complexities of power, gender, trauma, and truth. In psychology, the Cassandra complex serves as a metaphor for individuals who foresee disaster, sense looming crisis, or possess hard-won insights, yet find themselves ignored, dismissed, or disbelieved by those around them. Though not a formal clinical diagnosis, the concept captures a recurring pattern of social alienation and communicative breakdown. Those who embody the Cassandra archetype are often left in a state of psychological limbo, burdened by knowledge they cannot transmit and isolated by the refusal of others to listen. Cassandra's myth encapsulates this dilemma with haunting clarity. Given the gift of prophecy by Apollo and then cursed by him when she rejects his advances, she then becomes a vessel of truth rendered powerless. Her accurate, often harrowing visions of Hector's death, of the fall of Troy, of her own murder, they're not merely ignored. They are ridiculed, weaponized against her, or erased entirely. Thus, Cassandra becomes a lens through which to critique ancient power structures, especially the gender dynamics that defined classical antiquity. She is passed from one male figure to another. She is brutalized by Ajax the Lesser in Athena's temple and taken as a concubine by Agamemnon, the very man who led Troy's destruction. In each instance, her voice is silenced, not by the failure of her message, but by the refusal of her world to grant her authority. Her tragedy, then, is not merely personal, it's political. Feminist readings of the myth have rightly reclaimed Cassandra as a figure of resistance and integrity. Despite the futility of her words, she doesn't stop speaking. Despite being repeatedly dismissed, she continues to warn, to name, and to reveal. Her story becomes a testament to the resilience of women who speak truths that the patriarchy cannot or will not acknowledge. She is, in many ways, an ancient precursor to modern whistleblowers, to activists and truth tellers, particularly women whose insights are invalidated until it is too late. Yet Cassandra is more than just a symbol of gendered injustice. She embodies the deeper psychological pain of foresight without agency. Her story resonates with anyone who has felt the weight of knowing what others refuse to confront. The slow erosion of hope when the truth becomes indistinguishable from madness in the eyes of others. This is the true core of her mythic suffering, the unbearable clarity of vision paired with the absolute inability to alter fate. In the end, Cassandra's legacy is not one of silence, but of unheeded truth. She's not a passive victim, but a profoundly human figure who wrestles with the burden of knowledge and the loneliness of disbelief. Her myth reminds us of the cost of ignoring those who see clearly in the times of crisis, and of the enduring power of those who, even when they're unheard, continue to speak. While Cassandra is not a historical goddess, but she is a mythological mortal, her story has continued to resonate across cultures and centuries because of its deep emotional, psychological, and even symbolic power. Here are a few reasons to connect with Cassandra and even her story. Number one, she represents the struggle to be heard in a world that silences truth. Cassandra's tragedy is rooted in her ability to see the truth, and the agony of being dismissed. This speaks to anyone who's tried to sound the alarm, anyone who has tried to share insight or even advocate for justice, only to be ignored, doubted, or labeled irrational. Her story echoes in contemporary contexts: climate scientists warning of catastrophe, whistleblowers exposing injustice, or marginalized voices trying to tell hard truths. Connecting with Cassandra means recognizing the value of speaking out, even when the world refuses to listen. Number two, she embodies female resilience and defiance in the face of oppression. Cassandra is one of the earliest mythological figures to illustrate how women are often punished for their voice, for their knowledge, and their refusal to submit. She's cursed not for lying, but for telling uncomfortable truths. Despite being passed from captor to captor and ultimately killed, she never stops speaking. In this sense, Cassandra is not just a victim, she's a symbol of resistance. Her voice, though ignored in her lifetime, continues to echo as a powerful reminder of the enduring strength of those who refuse to be silenced. And number three, she reflects the emotional weight of knowing, but lacking control. On a deeply human level, Cassandra represents the emotional and even the psychological burden of foresight without power. Whether it's worrying for a loved one making a self-destructive decision, seeing political or societal dangers that others deny, or simply sensing outcomes before they unfold, many people know what it's like to see disaster coming and to feel powerless to stop it. Connecting with Cassandra means acknowledging the cost of insight, how knowledge can isolate, and how clarity can sometimes bring despair. Cassandra's story, though rooted in ancient myth, continues to feel profoundly modern. She speaks not only to women, seers, and even truth tellers, but to anyone who has ever felt the sting of disbelief, the weight of powerlessness, or the courage to speak truth to a world that refuses to listen.